Good morning, everyone. So today we have Ryan Keating sharing the message with us today. He is the team director for World Horizons, which is a church planning organization in Turkey and in Central Asia. So basically he's here today to share with us, and I'm really excited about him coming and sharing. He will be, or I will be, joining his team in Turkey in about a year, so I'm excited for him to share. That's all I have to say. Where should I put this?
Good morning. Good morning. It's good to be here. I was telling Liesl this morning how much I enjoy just being around hay and sheep and barns and stuff. You know, we had the privilege of having Liesl with us in Turkey last summer, 6 weeks with us, and it was awesome. You know, we had a great time driving all over Turkey in a crowded van, and we'd be driving away from a 2,000-year-old New Testament site and just these magnificent marble ruins, and coming down the village roads, and Liesl would say, "Tractor!" You know, she gets excited about the tractors. We actually pulled off the side of the road at one point to let her get on the tractor and took pictures of her at the tractor. So we love Liesl, and my kids love Liesl, and we've had a great time getting to know her. We're looking forward to having her. And so it's a privilege to be here seeing her friends and family and getting a chance to get to know some of her community here. As Liesl said, I lead the World Horizons field in Turkey and Central Asia. And we focus on two major ministry focuses in our field: ministry training and church planting. That is, we want to see new churches emerge in places where there are not believers now. So, for example, in the city of Kars in the far northeast of Turkey, a city of about 120,000 people, the same size as Nineveh in the days of Jonah, and there are no churches there. There are no missionaries there. There are less than 5 believers there. And our team wants to send a family to plant a church in Kars. But we also want to see Turkish believers equipped for ministry in Turkey into the nations. We want to see Turkish Christians serving in Turkish churches and taking the gospel outside of Turkey, for the Turkish church to take seriously its responsibility to the Great Commission. I want to share this morning a couple of stories about Turkey, some things that related to what we're doing now. And I also want to share from the Bible some things that have been significant to me in my ministry, and I hope that they'll be applicable to you. In fact, thinking about coming to Liesl's church, of course, I was thinking about sheep. So I'd like to share from John chapter 10. Jesus tells a parable here. He's using metaphor to describe his own role in this passage. And we'll read the first 5 verses. "Very truly, I tell you, Pharisees, anyone who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice." I didn't grow up around sheep, and I really don't know anything about sheep. And as I get some information about sheep, and even just hanging around the farm this morning, I was sharing at breakfast that there's 2 kinds of observations that strike me. On the one hand, being around sheep gives some insight into these passages where Jesus is describing his role as a shepherd or the believers as sheep. On the other hand, there's such a contrast between the real life of taking care of sheep and the kinds of values that Jesus is describing in passages like this one. They don't look anything like what an actual sheep farmer does. I want to bring out a couple of those kinds of observations as we look at the passage. To give some context here, Jesus has healed a man a blind man, and he did it on the Sabbath day. So there's an uproar, and the Pharisees send out a team to investigate, and they call the man in a couple of times, and they talk to his parents, and they talk to some of the witnesses, and they're dealing in the background, looking for a way to trap Jesus. And this is Jesus' response to all of this plotting and scheming. He says, "Very truly, I tell you, Pharisees, anyone who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber." Jesus is contrasting the ministry of the true shepherd, the good shepherd, with a thief and a robber, and then a couple of verses later with the stranger. There is a good shepherd, and it's contrasted with a thief and a robber and a stranger. The good shepherd, Jesus says, isn't sneaking around trying to find some back door into the sheep. He comes in through the gate. The thief is looking to sneak in some other way, and this is an indictment against the Pharisees. You are like sheep thieves, sneaking in some other way. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. Jesus is saying, I don't sneak around. I'm coming right to my people. I proclaim openly. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. It's a picture of Jesus as the shepherd who cares for his people. Jesus as the shepherd who leads his people out to pasture, who teaches them how to live. Jesus as the shepherd who guides, who provides, who feeds and protects. He leads out his people. He teaches them how to live and cares for them along the way. He's contrasting that with the ministry of the Pharisees, who are acting more like thieves and robbers. When he's brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. Jesus is saying, that's me. They know me. They hear me. They'll never follow a stranger. And here's the contrast with a stranger. They'll never follow a stranger. In fact, they'll run away from him because they don't recognize a stranger's voice. Jesus here is making a contrast between the work of a real shepherd, the true shepherd, the good shepherd, as he will call himself, and a thief and a robber on one hand, a stranger on the other. Verse 6. Jesus used this figure of speech, but the Pharisees did not understand what he was telling him. See, Jesus is making reference to an Old Testament passage, one that we're going to look at in a moment. The Pharisees don't get it. They don't understand the nuance that Jesus is trying to convey. And so he says, again, "Very truly I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep." Now Jesus is not, don't picture Jesus as barbed wire or as wood on hinges. He's saying, imagine the shepherd standing in the door of the pen. The sheep can only come out or go as the shepherd allows them. And he's deciding which ones will come in and go out. He stands at the gate. I am the gate for the sheep. All who have come before me are thieves and robbers. But the sheep have not listened to them. So Jesus is giving us some insight into who he means by thief and robber. He's talking about all of the messianic pretenders who have gone before, the people who claimed to be Messiah. But he's also referring to the Pharisees here. He's addressing the Pharisees, saying that they are acting this way, the way a thief and a robber acts. I am the gate. He says it again. Jesus is asserting his authority. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. We find in Jesus the source of life. We find in Jesus a way of living. He teaches us how to live. The thief comes only to steal, to kill, and to destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. I grew up hearing that voice in that verse in the context of prayer and Satan. But the thief in verse 10 is not Satan. This is not a verse about Satan. I mean, we've just read several verses about thieves and robbers. That's not who he is referring to when he describes the thief. Jesus here is laying out a model for serving, how the good shepherd ought to serve. It's too easy to foist this verse on Satan. Jesus is our good shepherd and Satan is the thief. The question here is not how will you protect yourself from the wiles of Satan the thief. The question is, are you the thief? Will you serve as the good shepherd serves, according to the model of the good shepherd, or will you act like a thief? Jesus is laying out for you a model for ministry. How will you serve? Will you be the thief? The thief comes to steal, to kill, to destroy. But the good shepherd gives life. Read just the first couple of verses. Tells us that the thief here in view is not, Satan, it's the Pharisee. It's the messianic pretender. It's anyone who would serve not for the benefit of the sheep, but at the expense of the sheep. Are you the thief? Jesus wants to lay out a model for ministry, an example for how we ought to serve. Thieves come sneaking around, and Jesus doesn't. The thief wants to benefit from the sheep, and Jesus doesn't. The thief is looking to serve at the expense of the sheep, but the shepherd serves for the benefit of the sheep. Here, don't lose sight of the core image of Jesus as shepherd. He is your shepherd. Jesus is your shepherd. He comes to lead you out. And this imagery of going out and coming in, it's, as we look at some of the Old Testament passages, it'll be clear that Jesus is making a metaphor on the idea of exile and return. God's people go out and they come back. He leads them out, but he feeds them, he protects them, he cares for them, and he brings them home. Jesus is the shepherd. He is your shepherd. You can entrust your life to him. That doesn't mean primarily getting into your head certain ideas about God so that you can go to heaven when you die, but rather trusting your life to the way of living that he demonstrates and proclaims. He is the good shepherd. I can follow him. I want to recognize his voice so that I model my way of living after the way of living that he demonstrates and proclaims. Jesus is the good shepherd. In verse 11, I am the good shepherd. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Here's a place where real sheep farming is just nothing like what Jesus has in mind here. I mean, the shepherd who actually is going to die for sheep has his priorities backwards. The shepherd does not die for sheep. Jesus wants you to see what an extraordinary shepherd he is. Not that he's just like those good-natured shepherds who are regularly dying on behalf of their sheep. We call that an unsuccessful shepherd. Jesus is an extraordinary shepherd. Because you are more important than sheep. And he serves sacrificially, laying down his life for his sheep. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Now here's a third contrast. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. So Jesus has contrasted the ministry of the good shepherd with the thief and the robber sneaking behind the scenes with the stranger who these messianic pretenders who the sheep did not in the end follow, and now with the hired hand. And imagine the difference between the owner of the sheep, the one who has everything on the line in this flock, and the man who is just paid a wage to feed them. The hired hand He's just looking for the salary at the end of the day. When a wolf comes, he's going to run away. He's got nothing at stake in the flock. But the good shepherd, he risks his life. Of course, even more than that, in Jesus' example, he lays down his life. Are you the hired hand? Will you serve for the benefit of the people that he's given you to serve? Will you serve at their expense? Will you serve like the hired hand? Or will you serve like the good shepherd? This is Jesus' point. He's asking that of the Pharisees. John includes that in his book, asking it of you. Are you the stranger, the thief, the hired hand? Or will you serve like the good shepherd? The man runs away because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. He says it again. I know my sheep and my sheep know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. Now, Jesus has created a metaphor. He's unpacked this idea of Jesus as shepherd, leading us out, caring for us, providing for us, bringing us home, and contrasted his ministry with the ministry of the thief, of the stranger, the hired hand. But none of this is new. Jesus is referring to ancient imagery. In this case, especially, imagery we find in Ezekiel chapter 34. Let's take a look at that chapter. Let me read the first five verses. Ezekiel is a prophet writing during the era of exile when God's people have been taken into captivity as a result of their sin. Ezekiel gives some specific information about why they are taken into captivity, and he places specific blame in this passage. The word of the Lord came to me, Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Oh, shepherd, again, is used metaphorically here. He's not talking about people taking care of sheep. He's talking about the leaders of the people. Which is how we know what Jesus intends when he describes the ministry of the good shepherd, that he's not actually talking about sheep or even just talking about his own role, but talking about the role of all those who are given a responsibility to serve. Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel and prophesy and say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Woe to you, shepherds of Israel, who only take care of yourselves. The Hebrew there actually says, who only shepherd yourselves. Here, it's a picture of shepherds, you know, running each other around in circles, taking care of each other. It's humorous. It's awesome. Should not shepherds take care of the flock? And you're just taking care of yourselves. You eat the curds, verse 3. Clothe yourselves with the wool and slaughter the choice animals. You want product of the sheep. You want the benefit of the sheep. You want the curds, product that's made from milk. You want the wool. More than that, you want the meat. That is, you will kill the sheep, but you won't serve them. You have not strengthened the weak or healed the sick. Or bound up the injured. You have not brought back the strays or searched for the lost. Jesus' ministry. Right here, can you see the contrast? Can you see the way that Jesus is using this imagery to describe his own ministry? As God accuses the leaders of Israel, you have shepherded yourselves. You will kill them, but you will not serve them. Verse 4 again, you have not strengthened the weak or healed the sick or bound up the injured. You have not brought back the strays or searched for the lost. You have ruled them harshly and brutally. So they were scattered because there was no shepherd. And when they were scattered, they became food for all the wild animals. This is the exile. They were scattered. And it's the shepherd's fault. skipping down to verse 11. For this is what the sovereign Lord says, I myself will search for my sheep and look after them. See what God is saying here. The exile comes as a result of bad leadership, bad shepherds. And here God, through Ezekiel, says, but I will shepherd my sheep because you have not done the job. You have not served for the benefit of the sheep. So I will do it for you. As a shepherd looks after his scattered flock, in verse 12, when he is with them, so will I look after my sheep. I will rescue them from all the places they were scattered on a day of clouds and darkness. In verse 15 says, I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the Lord. I will search for the lost and bring back the strays. I will bind up the injured and strengthen the weak. But the sleek and the strong I will destroy. I will shepherd the flock with justice. Ezekiel is describing the ministry of the work of a shepherd as a metaphor for the work of the leader, who in this case has served at the expense of the people that he was given to lead. And so God says, I will come back and do the job myself. In verse 31, you are my sheep, the sheep of my pasture, and I am your God, declares the sovereign Lord. All of this happens in the context of Ezekiel's description of God's glory leaving the temple. Throughout the Bible, it is the presence of God which characterizes the people of God. God's people are the people of His presence. God's presence is with the people, and that's why they are His people. God's presence is with them in the desert wilderness. God's presence is with them in the tabernacle. His presence is with them in the temple. God's people are known by His presence with them, among them. But in Ezekiel chapter 10, in verse 18, Ezekiel, in a chapter about God's glory in relationship to the people, images from the temple, verse 18, then the glory of the Lord departed from over the threshold of the temple and stopped above the cherubim. God's presence is gone. God's presence leaves the temple. And here, in Ezekiel, in 34 now, we have some explanation for what is happening. God's glory leaves. But in Ezekiel 34, God promises, but I'm coming back. But I will shepherd my people. You will be my sheep. And I will be your shepherd. And so from the time of Ezekiel through the first century, ideas about the glory of God, the presence of God coming home to His people, multiply and spread. God's presence has left the temple. So can you see what Jesus is saying when He says in John chapter 10? I am the good shepherd. God in Ezekiel 34 promises, I will come back to shepherd my people. Jesus in John 10 says, I am that shepherd. I am the presence of God returned to His people. I am the glory in the temple. I am the good shepherd. Jesus is the presence of God returned to His people. Jesus is the shepherd in... Jesus is God as shepherd, come to care for His flock, to lead them out, to feed them, to protect them, to heal them, to guide them. Jesus is the glory in the temple. It's how we understand prophecies in Haggai that describe this second temple. The glory of the second temple will be greater than the glory of the first. But of course, we never see that in the Old Testament or in the intertestamental period. In what way is that second temple greater than the temple that Solomon had built? Well, because this is the temple that Jesus teaches in. And in fact, in John, this is an especially important theme. Jesus is always teaching in the temple. And John weaves temple language all throughout his gospel, from the very first verses of his gospel. In John 1:14, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us, or rather, it tabernacled among us. God's glory, we have seen his glory. The glory of the one and only, full of grace and truth. Jesus is the glory in the temple. Jesus is the shepherd returned to guide and care for his people. The shepherd who will serve not at the expense of the sheep, but for their benefit. The shepherd who will lay down his life for them. Will you serve like the good shepherd? We take Jesus as our shepherd, not just because we will go to heaven when we die, but because he gives us a model for how we ought to serve. What kind of shepherd will you be? Back to John 10. In verse 16, I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. Jesus here referring to the Gentiles. There is a flock, the sheep, God's people, Israel. The way that his Jewish hearers would have understood this image of sheep and shepherd is God and his people, Israel. And Jesus here says, but I've got sheep in other pens. That is, flocks which are not Israel, the nation. And I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life, only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father. It's an image of Jesus standing at the gate of the nation, calling his people home. Come out! The good shepherd is here. Jesus stands at the gate, not just of Israel, but of the nations, to say, come out! The good shepherd is here. And this is not just the ministry of Jesus in some ethereal, metaphorical way. This is your ministry. We stand at the gate of the nations and call out with the voice of the good shepherd, come out! The good shepherd is here. My job is to stand at the gate of Turkey, cities like Kars, and say, come home, the good shepherd is here. That's your job. It's the way that Paul understands his relationship to this calling in 2 Corinthians 5:20. We are, therefore, Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. We implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. This is the job of the church. To stand at the gate of the nations. To serve as the good shepherd serves. To call home his exiled sons and daughters. And to serve as good shepherds. Binding the wounded. And feeding the hungry and clothing the poor. And laying down our lives to serve for the benefit of his people and not at their expense. Jesus ends the passage describing his death and resurrection. I lay down my life. Nobody takes it from me, he said. And I take it up again. We have Jesus as the model of our good shepherd, not only in the laying down, but in the rising up. Lay down your life for the people that he has given you to serve. And should it come to that, he will raise you up again. This is our model. We serve as good shepherds for the people that he has given us to serve. We serve laying down our lives for their benefit, knowing that if I have to give it up, he will give it back to me. Turkey is a country of 70 million people. There are now 4,500 Turkish Christians. 4,500 Turkish Christians in a country of 70 million people. There are about 120 Turkish churches. The average church size is 12. It's our job to stand at the gate of the nation of Turkey and call home his exiled sons and daughters. That's not just my job, that's your job. Will you serve as good shepherds? Will you lay down your lives for the nations that Jesus is longing to call home through you? I direct a ministry training program called Philippus. The goal of Philippus is to equip Turkish and Turkish-speaking Christians to serve in churches in Turkey and the nations. So we draw together believers from around the country. We live together in community with them for a year. We take between 5 and 10 students a year. Live together in one building so we can help equip them in knowledge, experience, in character, teaching them how to be good shepherds, how to serve, and how to serve in a place where it might come to laying down your life. It means that I have to be convinced that Jesus is the good shepherd. When I commend the way of life that Jesus calls us to live, I have to be convinced that Jesus is the good shepherd. Because I am, in some cases, calling them to die. I'm calling almost all of them to be rejected by their family, by their friends, to lose their jobs, their social status, their opportunities for advancement in their careers. Some of them banishing them to a life of singleness. There are only 4,500 Turkish Christians. That's a narrow pool of eligible candidates. He is the good shepherd. You first have to discover that. And it's the same thing with the life of my students in Turkey. They need to be convinced that Jesus is the good shepherd. That he is the gate. That he shows me how to live. That he leads me out into the pastures and he brings me home. And then to take from him the example of serving. To learn to serve from the Good Shepherd, how to lay down your life with the promise that he will give it back. In 2007, three of my colleagues were killed, tied to their desk chairs, and tortured with kitchen knives. And their throats were slit. This isn't the kind of thing that happens every day in Turkey, it's very rare. Those three men laid down their lives. This idea of laying down your life as shepherd takes on new reality when you know someone who has done that. My students, they know these men. They're their people. It's their church. Today, there's another opportunity to be calling home God's exiled sons and daughters. Because in Turkey, there are now 2 million refugees. In a country of 70 million people, 2 million refugees. Civil war in Syria and the growth and spread of ISIS from Iraq into Syria has driven hundreds of thousands, millions of people out of their homes across borders, many of those to Turkey. So there are now 2 million. More than 2% of the country is refugee. So those people come across the border sometimes with whatever they could scrounge up, sometimes with literally nothing. They come not speaking Turkish most of the time. They speak Kurdish or Arabic, depending on what people they came from. They're now living on the streets of cities in Turkey, raising children who don't speak Turkish. Just right before I came here, I was sitting at an intersection, and there was this roving band of 6, 7-year-old street kids, boys, running down the street, huddling around this little wallet that they had managed to grab from somebody. It's the job of the church to care for them. Serve them, to call them home, to lay down our lives for them. That's your job. We spent the last year trying to pray about and consider some way, what can we do, what can my team do to meet the needs of the refugees, 2 million refugees. We're a team of 22, 23 people. We discovered an idea as a team and began to put it into practice. It's been just 9 weeks. Started just before I came here. We invited the refugees in Ankara to come to the church to be registered. And we took a photo. We took some basic information. We gave them all an identity card with a number and a QR code, just like a barcode on their card. And we gather packets of food. It costs 25 lira for us to put together a basic grocery bag of staple foods to sustain an adult for a week. That's a kilo of rice, a kilo of pasta, a liter of oil, some milk, sugar, salt, and tea. And some lentils. And we put those packets together on Wednesdays at 1 o'clock, from 1 to 5 o'clock. However many packets we were able to put together based on how much money we received that week, that's how many refugees we call. They all come with some kind of contact information because they want to be, they're trying to register as refugees for resettlement in some other country, so they have some way of being contacted by cell phone. We take that text message, we take that cell phone number, we send them a text message calling however many people we can provide packets for that week. And so we get it this first time. That was the idea, and it sounded great, and I wasn't sure it was going to work at all. So we made some invitations, and we passed them out around the neighborhood. And the first Wednesday, 5 people came. Oh, that's great. So we just took registrations that week. And the next week, then, we made 5 packets. We called those 5 people. 4 of them came. 1 of them didn't. And we gave 4 of those packets. But they brought 10 of their friends. We registered those 10. So the next week, we prepared 15 packets. This past Wednesday, we broke 1,000. 1,000 refugees registered. We could only give away 150 packets. We gave 150 refugees food, which is amazing and wonderful. But there's another now 700 or 850 on my list. And this Wednesday, another group will come and be registered. We're grateful that we have an opportunity to serve. And when you think about what the 25 lira is, $10, what my $10 could do in this context, you know, how far it could go. We're trying as a team to learn, to discover together what it means to serve like good shepherds. How do we lay down our lives for the people that he's given us to serve? How do we serve not at the expense of the sheep, but like good shepherds for their benefit? How do we stand at the gate of the nations, not just of Turkey, where I'm now living, but of the nations whose people have now come across the border? Syria and Iraq, Arabs and Kurds, to call home God's exiled sons and daughters. And we're still trying to figure out what we will do, what's the next stage. We just keep letting it grow. It's brand new. I've got some flyers about that ministry, a little blurb about it. If you're interested, I can give you one later. I want to tell you just about one more thing that's going on in our field that's not related to Turkey. We have in our field Turkey and Central Asia, which means that we're responsible for a number of countries in Central Asia where we have teams and ministries. Those are the stands. So we have active teams and ministries in Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan. And the ministry training program that we have in Turkey, Philippus, which is equipping Turkish men and women, we now have Philippus programs, separate Philippus programs in those three countries. So there's a Philippus in Kyrgyzstan, and we rented a house in this last year. We just a couple of months ago, in May, we had our first graduation of the first Philippus Kyrgyzstan. It was amazing. We had six students in that program graduate from Philippus in Kyrgyzstan, all students from Kyrgyzstan. And the church that hosts that ministry there is excited about doing it again. We had a team that was there just temporarily for 1 year, made a one-year commitment, and they've got to go on somewhere else. So we've now brought a new couple that I haven't even met yet, a local couple. He's Russian and she's from Azerbaijan. Now they're going to be leading the Philippus team and the Philippus ministry in Kyrgyzstan. And we have no idea how we're going to do it yet. I mean, I don't speak Russian. This guy doesn't speak English, so I've got to work with a translator to give him some orientation into what Philippus is. And we're trying to figure out, how is God going to provide for this whole thing, for Philippus in Kyrgyzstan? It's brand new. It's seed of something exciting. I'm inviting you to pray with me about Philippus, not just in Turkey, but in Kyrgyzstan, especially right now, as we figure out the nature of the team and how to make this thing work, not just in Turkey, but in Kyrgyzstan, and we want to see it spread. We have our eyes on Azerbaijan next. So what I'm asking for you is to pray. And I think some of you should consider going. Let me ask you this question to end. If God were asking you to move to Kyrgyzstan today, would you be able to hear it? Let's pray. God, we want to take from you our model of serving. Be our shepherd. Father, lead us out, guide us, feed us, protect us, bring us home. May we learn to serve the way you serve, not at the expense of the sheep, but for the benefit of the people that you've given us to lead, to serve. Move our hearts, Lord, to stand at the gate of the nations and call out with you, come home. The Good Shepherd is here. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you.